Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to changing the world of work so that more organizations can be more effective and less dysfunctional, and employees can be more fulfilled and less miserable. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni. I'm joined, as always, by Cody Thompson, my co-host. How you doing, Cody?
Doing great.
We've got Matt Lencioni in the room, our engineer. How you doing, Matt?
Good. How are you?
Good to have you here. I'm doing great. Cody, what's our topic today?
Well, Tracy's gone, so no, we didn't sneak one by her. We're doing a real one. We didn't sneak any bad words.
We were
going to
do a sports podcast, but yeah. We decided not to.
Today's topic is the whole world is wasting time.
Yeah, and here's what we mean, and it's important. That's not a throwaway title. We believe that the default position of the vast majority of people and organizations in the world is that getting something done takes far, far longer than it needs to. We've become a culture, I think, addicted to process and formality, and it causes unnecessary delay, frustration, mediocrity, and even disillusionment in our homes, our companies, and society. Things just take too long. And it's not something we should take lightly. Because see, the thing is, there are reasons this happens, and there are ways to overcome them so that we can actually get more done, see more impact, have more fun, and make the world around us better. And I know that sounds like a big cliche or an overstatement, but we are convinced that it's true, and that's what we're going to talk about here today.
That's right. And I love the way you put that at the beginning to frame it up, is that this is the default position of organizations, of groups of people, is to say, hey, we should have a meeting for that, or we should schedule something, rather than just dive right in. And we've noticed this over and over and over again at our company, that in these short, small bursts, when we are really trying to make as much progress as we can against something, the process is really bringing the whole world to a grinding halt.
Yeah. And I've, throughout my career, I've been like this. I've seen this. And in the last few years, I've been realizing things really don't have to take that long. And we've been experiencing some of this recently. The reason why we're doing this podcast today is because just yesterday we were in a meeting and we said, we have to get something done. It's a big thing. And Amy said, okay, I'm going to take ownership for that. And I'm going to look into this. And it was clear, if you'd ask anybody how long that would take, Amy and all of us would have said, yeah, probably 3 or 4 weeks. And during the meeting, I said, well, why don't we do something right now? And mm-hmm. Amy said, and Amy's great at this, she just took out her phone and texted this guy who we were going to say, well, let's figure it out with him. And this was about putting together a big deal that would have taken a month.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept talking about the program we were going to launch. And the guy sent a text back and said, I can meet tomorrow at 10 a.m.
Yep.
We're like, awesome. We met at 10 a.m. today. The guy said, I'm going to have something back to you today. And we think in 24 hours, we will have put together a deal that would normally have taken 30 days.
Yeah.
Just because we'd have sent out a note, we'd have scheduled it, we'd have probably had to cancel it, we'd have had a meeting, we'd have run. And we were like, let's just cut to the chase. Let's be very clear about what we want from him. Let's see if he can do it. Let's call him right now. And we were like, usually the best things we do work like that.
Totally. And what's funny is I think we've almost done this podcast about 6 times. Like when we're thinking about what are the topics? And I think this one finds its way onto our topic board, a dozen times or so over the last couple months. But what's so interesting is it seems like there's the reason the default position is take more time is that people think that that's like care and concern. Like, oh, I only do a really good job if I take a lot of time to do it. Like that shows that I really care.
And I was prudent, yes, and exactly. Careful. And there are things in life that you should not do,
yes,
in 24 hours. We're not saying everything in the world.
Brain surgery. Can you get that done in 10 minutes?
Exactly. And there's many things that take time, but most don't. Most things we're doing can actually be drastically shortened, but we have to realize we're used to this. Inertia says slow down and schedule a bunch of meetings and over talk about it and make sure it's perfect.
Well, I think that once you've seen the light, once you actually have, you know, a handful of people, you know, a lot of people probably have said like, oh yeah, they're cheering, going, I don't think things should take this long. But once you've done something really quickly and put something together and realized, man, we did that really well. It wasn't that the speed of it made it less quality. Like I now have a radar for any time somebody says, hey, well, let's schedule a meeting to talk about that. But immediately in my mind, I'm like, no, let's do it right now for 5 minutes and see how much
progress. And it might be that we go, hey, the 20-minute meeting you just scheduled or 5-minute meeting, it didn't work.
Yep.
So we need, but how many times, more often than not, we go, hey, we actually figured that out.
It's funny because just the other day, we were having the conversation and I asked you, I just had this meeting with this person whose title I didn't even really kind of understand, because I was like, I'm not exactly sure what to do in this conversation. And I got off the call and I said, how many jobs in a vacuum, and this isn't about eliminate, we want more jobs rather than less, but I said, how many jobs, if we were just talking about productivity and what it takes to get a job done, how many in the world, what percentage do you think shouldn't exist or like could go away tomorrow and marginally impact the bottom line?
Right.
And you said
40%. Yeah. And what I mean, like, so imagine there's 100 people working on something. Generally speaking, when we go into an organization, 40 of them, they exist because they've overprocessed things. And so that doesn't mean the organization should fire people. It means they could get that much more work done.
And make sure that it's all consequential stuff.
Right.
Right.
And that those people could be that much more productive and more people could be served, or those 100 people could have two companies instead of one.
Exactly.
The point is there's a lot of wasted time. And a big reason, let's go into the big reason why this exists. A big reason is because of politics and unhealthy organizations. People that go to meetings, they don't say what they mean or mean what they say. Totally. And they dance around things and they're self-interested. And there's something about directness and cutting to the chase and challenging one another and trusting one another that means you actually, because we've been talking about organizational health for years and the five dysfunctions of a team. One of the primary benefits is you get a lot more done in a lot less time.
Yeah, I think that can't be understated, because even when we were thinking about the times that we've done this or we've seen other people do it, it's sort of predicated on the idea that we trust each other and that we can have really good conflict around ideas so that we can get to the end result much faster. Because it's sort of, you know, even it's funny, just yesterday I was positioning a conversation with you and two other members of our team, and I said, before I started, I said, I'm going to say something. You guys are going to be shocked by it. Then we're going to talk about it for 5 minutes. You're going to go, oh, I think maybe there's something there. And then we're going to make a decision. And just by preemptively—
We all got very excited. Yeah.
But it was just like, we don't need to take all this time, all pomp and circumstance. Let's just get to the cut to the chase. And that conversation lasted 10 minutes.
But if you had come to that and said, I'm already dug in on this, I'm going to try to convince you. And if you disagree with me, I'm going to hold my, you actually put it out there. And we actually convinced you.
You convinced me I was wrong in 10 minutes.
In 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm really glad you brought that up though, because now we're all on the same page.
Totally.
If you had not said that.
Totally.
You know, there's a movie that really demonstrates all this. And that is Ford versus Ferrari. You've seen that, Matt. Do you remember the scene?
Yeah.
So what happened? Give us your best description of what happened in that scene.
I don't think I remember it that well. I remember the folder.
So, and I've only seen the movie
it,
once.
It's great.
Yeah, yeah. So the guy walks into they're trying to decide if they're going to be able to compete.
Yeah,
you remember it
so,
best.
So the guy, basically the guy in charge of the race team goes to the head of Ford. So the a family member who is the acting CEO of the Ford Motor Company, and he's sitting in the weight room right after they lost a race and they like got smoked by Ferrari again. And so he is going in there thinking basically he's going to get fired. So he's in the waiting room that's outside of the CEO's office, and he's just sitting there observing. I think it's Matt Damon, right? Like, is the character. And there's like four or five people bustling around, you know, secretaries or receptionists or whatever. And
I think back then, this was a long time ago, they were secretaries.
And there's this red folder, and it goes from the mail cart to puts on somebody else's desk and then taken to somebody else's desk. And then finally the executive assistant like takes it into the CEO's office and welcomes the other guy in. And he sits down and he's like, tell me why we lost the race. You know, the CEO says it. And he says, well, we lost the race for the same reason that red envelope was touched by five different people before it made it into your office.
Right.
You know, and it's this great scene that kind of is representative of what we're talking about here.
True story too.
Oftentimes we just take five extra steps. There is a saying that the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. And we zigzag all over the place.
Oh, we see most of the organizations we work with and see, and in our homes, we don't look at that straight line and go, is there a way to do that? And we go ping here and ping there, knowing the whole time, like, well, I guess this is just the way it has to go. And it does not have to be that way.
So going back to the, whether this is a quality conversation, like, oh, if we don't take enough time, you have this great saying that you use around here, which I'll steal from you and say it on your behalf here, but you say anything worth doing is worth doing half-assed, you know?
Right.
But what you mean by that is just go. Don't, you know, the perfect, the enemy of the good concept. We talk about that every single day.
Right. And it doesn't mean half-assed means we have low standards. It means throw something out there, try to get it done, see how close you can get to necessary. And oftentimes we exceed it. Mm-hmm. And we're like, that was actually good enough.
Yep.
We're done.
And you, you know, I don't even want to gloss over the perfect is the enemy of the good, because that might be the single greatest inhibitor to people, you know, embracing this concept of speed and that people are wasting time is I think we're obsessed with making it exactly right and exactly perfect.
You know, something happened in my house the other day. I like to be neat for a variety of reasons. I have four boys. Two of them are still at home. One comes in and out every once in a while. Matt, you come to visit every once in a while too. Four boys in a house. And Laura is a wonderful, creative person. She's not a anal retentive, like cleaning the house all the time, which is fine. But I like things to be neat. I've always have been that way. And so I'm always like, oh, we got to clean the house. And we're always talking about, well, how are we going to do that? And well, who needs to do this? What are our chores? We have all these process things. The other day, my youngest son, Michael, did something that got him into trouble. I said, you're going to be grounded. And then he explained to me, I think we had a misunderstanding. And I was like, you know, you're right. I still am going to punish you because there's some things you did wrong, but it wasn't as bad as I thought. You're not grounded, but here's what you're going to do. You're not going to do anything fun until you do all your homework and you clean this entire house. And later I walked around the house and it was really clean. And I said to him, hey, Michael, how long did that take you? He said, 30 minutes.
Right.
And I was like, 30 minutes? Which the cat's out of the bag now, because the next time I say the house is a mess, I'm just going to turn to one of my kids and go, hey, you got 30 minutes.
You could have spent 45 minutes doing a chore chart and then the house would look the same.
Exactly. Yeah. And I thought it was going to take him 2.5 hours, but he's like, I just did it.
Mm-hmm.
I had this friend when in my first job at a college at a management consulting firm. And on the weekends, we'd go into work because we worked many weekends. And he had these tennis shoes. And on the tennis shoe, he wrote the phrase, do it now. And I was like, Craig, what is that? He goes, that's my saying. Do it now. You could do it now. And I've learned that it's really true.
My brother must have gone to a similar sister college to that person because he had this. It's funny that when he says this, because he tries to set it up like, oh, I learned this thing in business school. It's the RFN, you know, system of getting things done. And so it sounds like it's like this big process. And I'm like, what's the RFN? And he's like, right effing now. Just do it. You
know? Right freaking now. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. And he didn't go to business school.
No, yeah.
And the thing about it is, all of us in our families, in our companies, in our organizations can say, let's see what we can do. Hey, Matt, tell us about the 5:30 to 6:30 rule we have around here.
Oh, just at the end of the day, when we're getting ready to leave, it's before you leave, if you can just spend a half hour getting as much done as you can.
Right.
It's crazy how productive we can be.
Right. We'll say like, hey, what if you just stay another half hour and everybody finds a way to do something like, holy Toledo, that just saved me 3 days of work.
Right. Or it's like, well, that was three times as productive as the previous hour, you know,
or three hours.
And something like that. It's really just a mindset. I think there's something about putting a time restraint on something and forcing people to operate within that and say, just make as much progress as you can. Because there is this concept, and Amy's great because she brings this up all the time, is that, I don't remember what it's called, but the concept is that work will expand to the available time.
Yeah.
So if I tell you,
about this in a previous podcast.
Yeah, we might have. So it's like overnight you can do something, but if you give yourself 3 weeks, you can also do it in 3 weeks.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. And there's something about, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And, you know, you saw the movie Apollo 13. They're like, these guys are coming. We got this much stuff. Let's figure out a solution.
Totally.
If they just said, we have 2 months to figure this out, they probably could get it done in a month and 3.5 weeks.
Totally.
And so again, that's not to say that everything in the world works that way. Far more things in the world work that way. But we just settle for taking too much time, scheduling too many meetings, passing things back and forth. And there is also a part of this that I think we can teach our young people out there. And that is picking up the phone and calling somebody. Having a back and forth conversation can happen a lot quicker than texting.
Right.
Because people can go, oh, I'm not going to get back to that one. I'll see. And I was just talking to some people the other day and I said, why didn't we get this done? Well, we texted him. He hasn't gotten back to us yet. So I can freaking pick up the phone, track him down and have that conversation.
Yep. And I love what you said at the very beginning, Pat, is like really, and maybe it sounds too altruistic, but you know, if you're at a company that is making a meaningful difference in somebody else's life, like whether you're at a hospital or you know, for us, you know, helping cure job misery or making people more fulfilled, there's a real reason to buck the system here. There's a reason to say, we've got to get things done faster. We got to eliminate some of this process and procedure and the wasting time because people are on the other end are suffering.
We could serve more people. I remember the end of Schindler's List. This is a deep thing now. And he just said, I could have saved more.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us are in a position to serve people. We could have served more if we just found a way to get things done in the right amount of time, which is probably less than we're thinking now.
Yep.
Now, we got some awesome feedback last week from our podcast about be a jerk.
Yes.
And Matt, you're going to share. I love some of this feedback because they really got it.
Yeah. So one of our listeners reached out and described that the idea of not being a jerk is kind of one of the single biggest challenges or bottlenecks that his company is facing currently. He described it as approval addiction.
Oh, I love that. Approval addiction.
Yeah. Or the aversion to being an occasionally disagreeable leader.
I love it. Mm. That's what a jerk is. Occasionally disagreeable.
That doesn't sound that bad.
You know, I once somebody said recently, if you're a great leader, a CEO has to be slightly unreasonable because you're stretching people to do more than they thought. But if a CEO or a leader or a parent is always reasonable, they're never going to do that. And being unreasonable means being a little J jerk. Mm-hmm. So keep going, Matt. Sorry.
Yeah. He actually went on to describe what he said was the years and layers of reinforced bad habits, skirting around, dressing up, watering down, over-explaining. And the last one, personally taking responsibility or even apologizing for negative feedback that he needed to give others.
Oh, man, I can relate to that. I've been reluctant to be a little J jerk. And then when I finally comes out, I can be a lot bigger J.
Yeah. So,
okay, that's awesome.
Yeah, we had another listener reach out and the title of the email was A Little J Jerk in a Bless Your Heart World. She's from the South.
She lives in the South. Bless your heart.
She described how she's viewed as a troublemaker or an outsider who comes to mess things up, even though she's providing feedback that she thinks is necessary. She said she's proud to be a jerk and that
I love it.
She knows that there's certain places where it's embraced and valued and she's going to lean into those places.
Here's the problem. We often feel guilty for being jerks, little J jerks, and that's not good. Mm-hmm. People should say, thank you for ruffling my feathers because I needed it. Now, in the moment, they're not going to do that or else it wouldn't be being a little J jerk. But we need to realize I'm doing something for their benefit. And they are mad at me. And I, as a parent, I can relate to this. None of my sons, when I punish them or correct them, says, thank you, Dad. That was great. And I have to look at them and go, 10 minutes from now or 2 hours from now, or hopefully not, but maybe 20 years from now, they're going to say, thank you for doing that. But if I take on the look on their face, or if an employee gets pushed out of their comfort zone a little bit, and I'm judging whether or not I should do that based on the feedback they're giving me in the moment, I won't do it.
Yeah.
So be little J jerks. And I love what that last one said. She said she's going to find a way to help people in her or an organization value that more. Rather than just whining about it and leaving, she said, I'm going to teach them that this is in their best interest.
That's great.
Even in the South.
Bless her heart.
Bless her heart. I love the South, but that's true. They do that. Like, she's really a mean woman. Bless her heart. Yeah. <It's> like, so thank you for those letters. We got a bunch of others. We love to hear from our listeners. And so thank you for sending those in. Matt, thanks for finding those. We will see you next time on At the Table. God bless.